Hello, and welcome to Criminal Justice Knowledge. My name is Natalie Miller, and I'm very pleased to welcome my guest today, Professor Alyssa Ferns, one of the faculty members here at Humber in the Criminal Justice Degree Program. Thank you very much for joining me today, Alyssa.
Thank you for having me.
So today we're going to be talking about the biopsychosocial model. So what is the biopsychosocial model exactly? What's a brief lowdown on it?
Okay, well, I'm very excited to speak to you today about that model, mostly because it brings together a lot of different concepts and a lot of different perspectives all together into one model, which a lot of times when we're thinking of theory, we want that to happen. So what it is the interaction of biological factors, psychological factors, and social factors as a way to approach all sorts of different behaviors in the world, but specifically today we'll talk about criminal behavior. So it's basically a multi-factor approach to understanding why somebody would do something. It comes out of a health perspective, but again, we as criminologists and psychologists and sociologists connect it to crimes.
So how do the biological, social, and psychological factors relate to criminal behavior or why someone would engage in crime?
So again, the neat thing about the theory is that it's not that you just have one way of thinking why somebody did a crime. So it's the fact that you can then draw on all of those three areas to explain behavior. So I'm going to take us through biological, social, and psychological. So, and I just have a few ideas for why each one might relate to basically this criminal that we're going to think of in our mind. So biological. A person may commit a criminal offense, have criminal behavior, if they have neurotransmitter levels that are off, that are not what somebody who is not committing criminal behavior might have. So this means they could be born with a genetic defect where they have different levels of maybe it's serotonin, maybe it's norepinephrine, whatever. And we're not going to get too far into the neuroscience of the whole thing, but something's going on with their neurotransmitter levels, and that could influence one piece of why they commit a crime. It could also be hormones. So maybe if we're at the biological level, we're thinking that they have elevated levels of testosterone. They have challenges then with that in terms of committing, being more aggressive or committing different deviant acts. It could also be from a biological standpoint, we're thinking of the idea of having something going on in their central nervous system. So it could be that they had a brain malfunction when they were born, a genetic defect in their brain in terms of pathways, or it could be a traumatic brain injury. So, and I think a lot of us have seen this happen in different parts of the, something in the news or different case studies where somebody was previously non-violent and then they had a brain injury for whatever reason and then they now are more aggressive. So it depends on which lobe of their brain maybe that accident happened, and then they could have these different side effects. So any of those things could be a biological perspective for looking at criminal behavior.
What about the social aspect of the biopsychosocial model? How would that relate to crime?
So again, really neat with this model, because now, let's say we have one or more pieces of the biological, now we look at the social. So we don't necessarily have to have all of the biological, but we might have one or two pieces of the social. So one of the social factors, and we look at these a lot within the criminal justice degree here, we're always talking about, right, social behaviors. And so some of the highlights, basically, it could be related to socioeconomic status, right? A need for committing a crime because of the different things that correlate with being in a low SES. It could be something related to attachment and parenting. It could be that parents were neglectful, parents were maybe even abusive, you didn't develop then pro-social ties with your peers, with your parents, with your family, and that has led to some type of deviant or potentially criminal behavior later on. This obviously then relates as well to how you would be doing in school. So depending on if you have friends, depending on if you have support, if you have food to eat in the morning, all those things could influence if you're able to be successful at school. We know that criminal behavior often related to then not doing well in school or dropping out of school, especially as you move into your sort of your 20s and into your adult life. The other piece that we talk about a lot with social behavior is drugs, substance use. So whether that substance use that you've seen happen in your life when you were a youth, or whether just getting involved in behavior as you move into your teens, into your 20s, the potential of being, whether it's an alcoholic or a drug addict, how that can relate then to criminal behavior. So those are some of the social influences.
And I suppose this leads into the psychological component. So how does the psychological factors in the biopsychosocial model explain criminal behavior?
Yeah, so the psychological component feeds off of the biological and the social. So that's, again, you can start to see how these things are all connected, right? Which is why it's great that they're all together in the biopsychosocial model. So some of the different psychological components for deviant or criminal behavior could be just having a higher level in your personality of being impulsive. So if you were doing an impulsive scale, you compared to someone else are more likely to make those impulsive choices and behaviors, and that is then linked to something deviant or criminal. Along with that goes the idea of being more sensitive to taking risks, more likely to take risks. Having more of a sensation seeking, like you want to push the boundaries a little bit more. All of those have been connected with the potential for criminal behavior. Another big one that we talk about, especially related to, and I don't want to go down the rabbit hole of sociopaths and psychopaths, but the idea of a lack of empathy. So however that comes about, whether it's related to, again, traumatic brain injury, related to parenting, but the potential for not having the ability to feel empathy is a huge piece in the potential for, especially a violent crime or maybe a sexual crime, because you don't feel altruistic towards your common person, and so you're not feeling like you're victimizing anybody. You want to do what feels good for you.
So what would be an example of all of these factors coming together in a specific type of crime?
Yeah, so if we sort of maybe take this and look at a case scenario of putting these all together. So here's what I have as one potential. So we're born and we're male. So right then already we've got a tick box for the potential for being a criminal. I'm sorry to the males out there who are listening. So you're male. Maybe you have a higher level than is average for testosterone, and you know that alone might be nothing, but then you also go through your parents having a divorce. So we've added having that biological into the social piece. So your parents divorce when you're young, and you then live with your father. Your father is not as interested in attaching with you emotionally, is maybe even bordering on neglectful, and so you want to desperately attach and have connections with people, but you're not sure how. You haven't been taught how to do that. From there, you then move into maybe your teen years, and you're trying to date women. You're trying to find a romantic partner, and you're not very good at it. So you're getting rebuffed, you're getting rejected, and that is taking a toll on you psychologically, because you don't have those social skills. So you don't have a girlfriend. You then start to, but you have a social circle. You go to parties. So at these parties, there is alcohol and potentially recreational drugs. So you're starting to engage in that. So now you've got that social behavior piece where now you are not necessarily an addict, but you're definitely a recreational drug user. And with that, you're always upping your level of wanting to do more and more risky things. So you then take that to, you know, one party, one time, you're feeling impulsive, women aren't connecting well with you, and suddenly a woman wants to have a drink with you at this party and wants to chat and wants to go upstairs and have a quiet space to chat some more. And you take that to be an opportunity to put your hand on her thigh and try to kiss her, and she chooses to not do those things and says, no, I don't want to. And again, because of these different things that are working together from a biopsychosocial approach, you choose to sexually assault her. And now you've taken the potential for respecting that woman and obviously not pursuing that to the level of engaging in a criminal act.
So you kind of touched on a little bit with that case scenario. What are briefly some advantages or disadvantages of the biopsychosocial model?
Yeah, so you're right. So a few times I sort of touched on one of the big advantages of it, and that is that this conceptual framework allows us to pay attention to all of those different aspects. So we can come at a problem or come at understanding a crime from all those different perspectives. And again, this is taken from understanding how a disease or how a virus works from a health perspective, but we're using it understanding how a crime can occur. So it sort of unifies our understanding of biological, psychological, and social theories. And with that, another sort of side advantage to it is that you can create a policy, or you can create a support group, or you can create a, you can understand some of those risk factors better because you're looking at it from all of those different approaches. So those are a few of the advantages of it.
Perfect. Well, I mean, we learned a lot. I want to thank you again for coming to the podcast today and teaching us about the biopsychosocial model. And until next time, I'm Natalie Miller, and this has been Criminal Justice Knowledge.